Greetings, dear listeners. This week, we're presenting a Wisdom of Crowds live show. Shadi and Christine recently sat down with Vox's Rachel Cohen, author of a piece dealing with millennials' dread about parenthood. It was a fascinating and at times very amusing conversation. We hope you enjoy. And we hope you'll join us the next time we decide to tape a show live. Before we get started, a reminder to head on over to wisdomofcrowds.live and consider becoming a paying subscriber if you're not one yet. And don't forget to give us a like and review on your favorite podcast app. With all that out of the way, on to the show.
To try and do this podcast because I read Rachel's piece, How Millennials Learn to Dread Motherhood, which came out, I think, in December of this past year. And I feel like it went incredibly viral, actually. Do you know how many people read it? Do you have any sense? You could also not say. It's fine.
It was definitely my most read piece at Vox. And it did, you know, it did exceeded our expectations, as my editors said.
I mean, I found it a fascinating piece because it really captured what seems like the zeitgeist, right? That there is this sort of swirling fear, especially for, I think, millennial women, but also for kind of younger generations in general, about parenthood, about how having kids seems hard and scary and maybe somehow inappropriate in the modern world. And I just wanted to dig into that a little bit with you. First of all, I guess just tell us why you decided to write the piece now or then.
Well, thank you for having me. This is really, it's great to be here and to be part of, you know, continuing conversation with new people and new perspectives. The piece started out, you know, more in my own just personal journey is of thinking about parenthood and getting to the point where that's something that, you know, is on the minds of people, but people aren't really talking about it that openly. It's not something that, despite everyone kind of weighing these concerns, there's still not that much space to kind of talk about them. And I, you know, looked for books to read on the topic, and I was trying to sort of find some insight to help me figure it out. And I bought a lot of books and I read a lot of books and I left. It was not making me feel any clearer, which is fine because it's a hard decision, but I was also just feeling like I think a lot of people feel, which is that so educated on the challenges of modern American parenthood and sort of the overarching message that you send is like, it's going to hurt your friendships, it's going to hurt your career, it's going to hurt your romantic relationships, your physical and mental health is going to, you know, go down the drain, you're going to get no help from your employer or the state, have fun. And like, and just sort of like sitting with what to do with all that information and feeling like we are not given, you know, it's like, okay, now I know all that and I still have to figure out what to do and I still have to make a decision, and feeling like wanting to know, just there was no clear way on how to, like, you know, you learn the information, but then what are you supposed to do with it?
That makes total sense, honestly. I feel like we're inundated with just sort of dread content constantly. It's like, well, yeah, good luck. Don't die. But maybe you will.
Yeah, I mean, I will say it really has shaped a lot of my thinking about all sorts of coverage that I do at Vox, because, or, you know, just in general, because the piece essentially looked at both also just implicit and explicit reasons why everything veers towards the negative, even when there is more positive things to tell. And it's not a secret that, like, in my industry, you're not going to really write a story like, this community had no trouble finding childcare, or like, you know, this woman feels good. And
this mom loves her kids. Yeah, read about it.
I mean, that was one of the most startling things from reporting, is like talking to people who really sort of sheepishly told me that they like being a parent, or like that it isn't that hard, or their partner does show up for them, but like they wouldn't say that publicly because they, because everyone's really conscientious and everyone's really sensitive and everyone knows that some people are struggling, so they didn't want to make anyone else feel bad. But it, like, collectively that all compounds to the point where you are only hearing, you know, really negative things. And I just sort of like finished. I was like, if I had even heard a fraction of this in the last 5 years, I think my like mind just would have, it would have been different, you know. And already even just in the response to the piece, I felt like I was hearing things like people raising their hands being like, yeah, I liked it, you know, it's actually good for, you know. And it's just like, I hadn't, that was nowhere to be found. And I was looking very hard to find it for a long time.
And for those who didn't get a chance to read the article, and also for our future listeners who may not have as well, can you maybe just summarize what are the main conclusions? Did you come to a conclusion? Because there's some ambivalence there, obviously, yeah. But I think you come out in a particular place.
Yeah, the piece, you know, for those who have not read it, definitely not telling you to have kids. One of my main areas of coverage is reproductive rights, and certainly not proselytizing having kids. But I think one of the main conclusions that I did have, and that I feel, is like, you know, if you believe in the concept of reproductive justice, and that's something that I do, like people, we should be supporting people who don't want to have kids. We should be supporting people who want to have families. We, you know, the whole spectrum. Like, we're not doing a very good job at that. And I think if you want that concept to have teeth, like, we need to be able to say to someone, you don't have to be a rich celebrity. Like, the message right now is like, unless you're like really, really religious, or you're a famously wealthy person, or you have grandparents on hand who have already promised to do 24/7 childcare, you are not going to survive this. You are going to be miserable. And I think like we just have this culture that's very unsupportive. And I, one of the main conclusions essentially is like, I think there's a fear that if we talk about what's good or what's improving or what's manageable, then we're gonna extinguish the fire necessary to make the kind of social change that we think that we need in this country, and like push for the better things. But like that if you only frame things in the most crisis oriented way, that's the only way we're gonna like be able to get Congress to pass the bill that we need. My plea was that I think we can have the courage to not take that frame, and that we can still push for the world we want and make people feel more confident and supported, and like, and that, and tell people the truth, which is more complicated than just, it will, you will be terrible, you'll be miserable unless we have Sweden's country, you know?
So I have to say, like, when I was reading the piece and just hearing you kind of describe the zeitgeist, I found myself really confused, because I feel like I've been conditioned in almost the opposite direction. All the conversations that I've been part of in recent years, the people that I'm around, I hear the opposite message, that having kids is how you find completeness, happiness. That's the way to proceed with your life. And I actually rarely hear people complaining about having kids. I remember growing up, there were like, you know, sitcoms, shows, and like, you know, people would say, oh, it's so hard to have kids and you want to enjoy being single and that sort of thing. So I almost have the reverse experience where I think...
From women too?
Sorry?
Are you hearing this from...
well, I'm...
A reporter.
I mean, I'll say that... yeah. Well, my female friends, and I am a little bit older, so that could be part of it, but I think my female friends, most of them are in the state where they really want to get married, they really want to have kids. Not all of them.
Yeah.
But I think, again, because I spend more time around, let's say, people who are more religiously oriented, and I work on the role of religion in public life. So I think it's interesting that being in a different environment where religion is present. And, you know, I have to say, like, you know, most of my friends are like vaguely center left, but I don't necessarily hang out with like proper progressives. So, and so, yeah, I guess that's also part of it too. So I just wanted to kind of raise that, as I think there's another current in society that is moving in very much a different direction, because I think we all realize something's not quite right. People, you know, especially young Americans, are profoundly unhappy, mental illness, epidemic of loneliness. We hear that endlessly, right? And it seems obvious that one of the ways to address that is to get married and have kids. It's almost so intuitive and so obvious that I'm surprised the argument has to be made, but apparently it does. Like, it just seems like the kind of thing people should do. And that's where I'd maybe push you on this and see how you would respond. What's wrong with saying that people should have kids? There is a better way to approach life based on what we know about fulfillment, happiness, and also we're below replacement rate. So if we want to, you know, going, the US population will peak at around 2080 if things don't change. So if we don't want to have a kind of perpetual decline going forward, we're going to have to find a way to go a little bit higher than 1.66, which is well below replacement rate for sustaining our population. So anyway, there's a lot there, but I'm curious how you would respond to
that.
And
wait, I want to jump in really quickly because this was a point that I was going to pull out. Your piece is called The Millennial Dread of Motherhood, specifically. I mean, we titled this event Parenthood at the End of the World to be inclusive, you know.
For me.
But clearly a lot of this messaging is targeted towards women and the burden of being a mother or of carrying a family, even if ostensibly you have a partner, like falls on women. Can you talk a little bit about sort of the material differences that you wrote about? I mean, you talked about, I guess, I think the phrase was, what was it? Gender duality, I guess? Or, 'cause I'm interested. I'm fascinated and not surprised by the fact that Shadi was like, well, I've never heard this. Actually, everybody wants me to have kids. They just want to give me kids right now. But that's...
Okay. So we've got a lot of good stuff to respond to. I will say I mean, women of, I think, across the political spectrum, including on the, you know, far left, like, there's lots of pressure to have kids. Like, that everyone feels that. And I think... I don't think the correcting the fertility rate is a strong motive, you know, incentive driving anyone to do these things. I think that, like, doesn't land well.
Do it for TFR. No? Okay.
But, I definitely think that if you were to, like, there's been a lot of research into, public opinion of women and how mothers feel. And I would definitely, like, I think you're right that there's, like, different cultures around it, but I don't think it's the case that, centrist women are not feeling lots of things described in this article or conservative women. Like, a lot of it's just more the idea of, like, because the, I guess, to be clear, a lot of people who have decided to have kids have all these feelings. Like, it's not, it's not just like, some people are ambivalent. Some people are like, I guess I'm going to do it, but it sucks that my life is going to be over, apparently, according to all the studies. And you could say, well, if they learn it doesn't end up that way, then what's the problem? But I think it's not good to have people, like, spending years of their life, like, anticipating all this badness. I don't think going into this huge experience of becoming a parent and, like, distrusting your partner or, like, expecting the worst or just, like, feeling really bad is the best we can do. So I guess that's one point.
And I'll just add maybe just one more thing for context.
Yeah.
I'd also say that in recent years, a bunch of my friends and acquaintances have gotten married and have had kids. Yeah. And hearing directly from the source is helpful, you know, kind
yes,
of
totally.
Primary sources and so forth. And almost without exception, I think about maybe one person I know in my life that I can think of who's like, sort of like, I don't love it. Almost everyone else is like, this is the best thing I ever did. This is the most fulfilling experience. Maybe I'm more stressed, I'm more, yeah. It's difficult from a day-to-day basis for both, certainly for women, but also for men. If they're trying to share in the experience and doing more and trying to have a more egalitarian household. So so I think that it's telling, and maybe people feel pressure to not say that they don't like having kids, but I also don't think that anecdotally the people around me are, like, lying to me.
No, I think
there's something to be said for, hey, people seem to think it's really good and it gives them a lot of meaning.
Yeah.
And they're like, this is incomparable.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think talking to people with kids is a huge like way to kind of help correct some of the things you're reading about. And I do think on my own like personal journey around this, I think there's a lot of pressure. Like, I think for a lot of people, women, I'm going to generalize, you know, there's this feeling like it's taken all this time to finally just figure out how to like get the sort of balance. Like, oh, I finally have time to cook and exercise and get my work done and go to sleep and like maybe see my friends and maybe go on a date or like, you know, do all these things. Like the idea of dropping kids, it just feels like blowing that up and like blowing up that equilibrium you've worked so hard to like piece together. But like part of like the way that I've come around thinking is like, well, when did I like hard isn't synonymous with bad. And like all the things I've done that I'm really proud of have been hard. And like we've sort of come to this idea that like frictionless peace, soft life, you know, that kind of thing is like the best life. And so I think kind of, but to what you were saying, like there is this sort of growing recognition, especially after the pandemic, that like maybe that's not the right way to think about life fulfillment. And maybe we can add some more friction, but we still do need like better policy. So I don't want to like lose that. We just have to like talk about all of it at the same time.
Well, I'm going to be mean to Shadi a little bit because that's just kind of my job on Wisdom of Crowds. Again, I really want to put a pin into this question of meaning, because I think that's a really serious discussion that's not had in public a lot. But I think what you wrote about really compellingly in your piece, Rachel, was the material difficulties and like the material disruptions for at least women that we're told come with having a child. Like, you'll have to do most of the work. Your partner will be there, but like, how much are they going to be there really? You know, you have to find childcare, et cetera, et cetera. Like all these things that you have to do, your body will be destroyed. I wonder, Shadi, like when you think about having children, or when you've like talked to your friends, especially male friends, about having children, like, is the discussion more like, well, it's great, like it adds a lot of meaning to your life? How much of the discussion is that sort of like positive narrative versus the nitty-gritty that I feel like women are told? Like, when you think about becoming a dad, do you think about like being awake at night and like doing 50% or more of the childcare? And like, what do you imagine comes with child rearing? Because I think that women maybe are taught to imagine it very differently.
Well, I think in the current moment, guys, you know, of my generation, or the younger generation, that one too, I think there's more of an expectation that men are supposed to do their part. I mean, when I look at my friends who are about the same age, who are guys, they're maybe not exactly egalitarian, but they're definitely doing more than, say, their parents or their grandparents. So there definitely has been a shift where there's a kind of expectation. If you want to be a good husband and you want to like vote for the Democratic Party and your wife's a Democrat, then you're going to have to like offer up a pretense of like doing more childcare at the very least.
Wait, hang on. What?
Because it's sort of expected. If you're going to marry...
You're going to pretend to be a Democrat housework until you can... I need more clarity.
Someone told me this the other day, and it really was, I think, a powerful thing. We were talking about the loneliness situation, especially for young men. And he's like, look, the easiest way to address loneliness is to have people around you. And so by definition... having a family will make you not lonely anymore. It's like the most obvious, straightforward way to address the problem at hand. Okay, but so I do want to add just a little bit of data, you know, at least from, you know, to ground us. And obviously there's different polls that you can look at, but I was just kind of going over some of this earlier today. And this is according to the 2022 General Social Survey, that women 18 to 55 who are married with children, 39.5% say that they're very happy, versus only 25% of women who are married without children. If you look at men, there's also a gap, but it's smaller. So married guys with children, 35% say they're very happy, compared to 30% who are married without children. So at least according to some of the data that we have, there is, and this is self-reported, obviously, there does seem to be indication that people who are married and have children are happier. It's interesting, though, if they are unmarried and have children, then their happiness goes and life satisfaction craters.
So,
and that's for understandable reasons, that if you're a single mother, also men, single men who kids. Are unmarried with kids are also very unhappy, presumably because they might not have custody. And, you know, that so there's a context there. But I think it's interesting that at least the data that I've been looking at seems to suggest that if you want to be very happy, that like this is the way to go.
I'll just add, like, the it gets tricky when you're talking about happiness versus well-being versus life satisfaction, and all these surveys get, like, you know, what you're measuring, and like, so I think, like, and what the stories people like think about their lives big picture versus on the day-to-day. And so I think what Christine, if I'm like, you know, what she's saying, and I think this is true in my like experience as well, like women are just often thinking much more specifically about what it's going to entail on a day-to-day basis. And sometimes men are more just like, yeah, let's just do it. Like, let's just, you know, we're just like, we'll show up and we'll just see what happens. And, you know, I think, and this was in my essay, and Jennifer Senior talks about this in her book, like, to some extent, women could do more to approach it a little bit like men in some ways. Like, that's not a totally unhealthy attitude, and like, just kind of like, come with me. You can't plan everything. Like, it's not healthy to try to plan for everything. But on the other hand, I think it can feel stressful to think like, and I don't want to make this too heterosexual, gender normative, et cetera, but like, to think that your partner is not like on the same plane as you, like, anticipating the same worries, just like that you're going to, then like, that only adds to the stress that you feel like it's already going to fall all on you anyway. Like, it's already an anxiety you have. And if you feel like your partner is not also meeting you on those terms, then it can exacerbate, but also you need to like chill out too. So there's all these like things. It's very complicated.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm definitely not going to debate you on the figures, because I've seen those too. And I actually think that's right. This idea of purpose and meaning that comes with being close to people and having intimate relationships, including your family. And like, it is just factually true that if you and your partner have a child, then there's one more person to be with. So yes, you
know, a lot of people can be lonely in marriages too. I don't know.
Yeah,
we need to like feel it.
But it's also harder to be depressed if you're never there's always like another human being right next to you.
Well, so,
and that's why like in high, I'll just, it's interesting.
Well, okay, been, yeah, no, go ahead.
You don't need to do, I think, okay. Yeah.
There's been some interesting academic studies on levels of depression and suicidal ideation in countries that have high population density and then obviously, you know, that are more religious, which correlates with that. But in countries where it's like hard to be alone and to find space to be alone, you find that suicidal ideation is significantly lower. And I just think, again, there's something to be said for, it's harder to, well, it is certainly more difficult to attempt suicide if there are people, around
next
you.
To you.
Yeah. Well, is this for men? Are you like, I'm just confused. Like, is this like you're giving this advice to men who are on the fence, or do you think this is like women are, like, I don't.
Yeah, because, you know, one of the things that I find just like interesting in this line of thinking, and I think that I, like, your facts are totally correct. I totally agree with you. But I mean, if you're scared of being alone and you just want more people around, you get a roommate for one thing. But also, like, it's just interesting that I maybe as a man, hashtag not all men, but maybe this particular man, and this is, I think, one of the things that you kind of got at in your piece, Rachel, is that it's very easy, I think, for you to be like, oh, well, loneliness is a problem. Just have kids. Like, I'll just have kids and loneliness will be solved. But like the whole, like, what does
women
it mean
get lonely
to
too,
have
though,
kids?
Just to
no,
be clear.
Of course. But like the question of, okay, what does having a kid mean? Like, okay, I'm going to carry a child for 9 months. Like, what will this do to my finances? What will this do to my body, my career? Like, these are the questions that I think contribute to this dread of motherhood. And I think there are like ones that you don't ask.
There are a lot of stories that I'm sure, like, Christine and I have absorbed that of women who had lots of friends and then became moms and then could no longer keep up with their friends and only with their kids. So I guess they're still around a human being, but they feel very lonely in that way. So that's like, it's just like, I don't think everything is like substitutable, but I don't think we're fighting. I don't think we're disagreeing that like kids can be a very meaningful part of life, and like that's not. I don't think where the debate is.
I don't think so. And like to be clear, and also this is probably worth noting, but interesting. None of us on the stage are married or have children.
Yeah.
And I can't speak for all of us, but I mean, I would like to have children. And I think, Shadi, that's a goal of yours too. So it's not, I don't think that anyone is necessarily against having children, but it's, I'm just interested in how differently we conceive of the process and sort of where the fear, if there is one, lies, and why it seems so much more salient for maybe Rachel and I, for women, than it does for men in a certain way.
Well, I'd be curious, I mean, to both of you, to what extent, and I guess this wouldn't just be limited to women, concerns about climate change, because you do mention that in your piece. And I think that's, for at least some people, the elephant in the room, that people, a growing number of people, choose to be childish by way, because they are, it's hard
Freudian
for me.
Freudian slip or purposeful?
They decide to be childless because they don't want to raise kids in climate catastrophe. Did I say something different?
You said people choose to be childish.
Oh, okay. Huh. Hey, look, it's possible. But it is a position, I mean, that position is one that I have trouble relating to, but I know it's something that you've looked at a little bit more, that there is a growing portion of the population, especially among young Americans.
Yeah, so I actually got some people were like, why did you talk about climate change more in your essay? So the statistic that everyone cites is a 2021 Pew survey that said 5% of people cite that as the reason they don't want to have kids, but like a vast, like 40% of the people said they just don't want to. I'm not saying everybody is lying. I'm sure you can find me somebody who's like genuinely morally, like that's where they landed. I do think there are a lot of people, I don't think it's that big of a group. And I think a lot of people in that group, there's still an element of like selfishness that women feel if they say they don't want to have kids today, like even if you don't, like, and so there's an aspect of like citing climate change that feels less selfish. And so it's a way, I think, for some people who are don't really want to have kids, they can say that, and that is like, you know what, but I'm just saying, for some people I know who've said that, they take a lot of international flights, and like so sometimes it's just like a little difficult for me to take that one seriously. My friend actually, who is she's 36, she's a 4-year-old, she wrote this amazing poem called Climate Change, and it is basically like all the conversations she had with her friends during the Trump administration, when they were all like talking about how they can never have kids because of the planet, and look at this president and this economy, and now they're like bunch of them had kids, and you know, over time. And anyway, I'm not saying like everyone is like that, but I think the media likes that narrative a lot, and I don't even think the polling we have shows that it's like a really hugely significant part of this conversation.
Do you guys remember that Ezra Klein column from 2022? And I swear this is real, and it's not to any fault to Ezra. He was just reporting what he hears. He said, in recent years, as I've gone around the country and given talks and engaged with people publicly, he said, the number one question I get from audience members is, should I have children given climate change? It's called, I think, you can search, it's, you know, it's available online. but you know, it's interesting that it does, at least in some circles, people say it. So it may be true that they're sort of dissembling, and they're using climate change as a way to convey a deeper anxiety. But maybe that deeper anxiety still speaks to a sense that things aren't going that well, and people are concerned about what it means to bring children into this world.
Well, I think there's two. There's like the, if you take it sort of at its face, there's the like, I can't justify the carbon emissions of having another child. Like, how can I morally justify it? Then there's the, how could I bring someone into a world that's burning and like force them to subject to that? And I mean, I sort of have problems with both of those for different reasons, but I just, at least the second one, I'm like, people have been born into much worse situations, and people are born into like war and famine all over, you know, and I think wherever you land on having a kid, like, the kid is not like mad at the parents for being born. The kid, like, you know,
probably happy so, that they're alive.
That's
well, so there's actually there's a fascinating essay in, I think, last month's Harper's Magazine. I think it was last month. It was by Elizabeth Barber, and it was called The Case Against Children. And it was actually just about antinatalists. And so people who are just against procreation, basically. And she follows, like, youngish people, people in their, like, late 20s, early 30s. And some of them cite climate change sort of as part of the cause. But the general idea is that they're arguing that it's not ethical to have children. Yes, exactly as you said, because, like, the world is bad. Like, it's only going to get worse. Having a child means that you will be bringing needless suffering into the world because they will be suffering more than they would if they are not existing. Which
was it persuasive, the essay?
It, you know, it didn't persuade me. It didn't persuade me, and it didn't actually seem to persuade the essay writer following these people around, because they just, Pache Shadi actually just kind of like seemed depressed and lacking in meaning. But I wonder, I'm interested in, you said you disagreed with, or maybe disagreed with, both the climate change argument and the general, like, kids will be sad. It's a hard time. Like, every time is sad. What, tell us more about that, actually, because I think there's like the material argument that you talk about, like, having kids may feel scary because, you know, we don't have a good social safety net. Like, we worry about our partners not, you know, standing in enough. We worry about disruptions to our lives. But there's also just a non-material, like, almost a spiritual fear that I feel like I'm seeing in a lot of people, where, of course, you can say climate change is the excuse. You can say, like, I'm scared that my partner won't go 50-50 or 100-100 is the excuse. But it's really something deeper.
In your personal networks, do you feel like you know people who are citing the more spiritual reasons to not have, I'm just kidding.
I don't hear the spiritual explanation, because I think if you're more spiritually or religiously inclined, you know, part of most faith traditions is that life involves suffering, that people aren't supposed to be happy. This idea, this idea that everyone is just expected to be in a good state of mind and sunny all the time is like a very odd modern concept. And I think what religion helps us do is just accept reality that, you know, there is going to be at least emotional or psychic suffering, even if there isn't as much material suffering. And it's, you know, it's worth knowing that the people who write a lot of these case against children, the world is going to hell in a hell basket, are white progressive elites. And it's just telling to me that, you know, relatively rich people, some of the richest people in human history, are the ones who are saying that the world is about to end. I mean, there's something kind of almost certainly off-putting, but even offensive about it. Like, who are these people to tell us? Like, you guys are medieval peasants, you know? And even medieval peasants in the 16th century, most, at least as far as we know, they weren't saying, I'm a medieval peasant, therefore I'm not going to have children.
Did medieval peasants know they were medieval peasants?
Exactly.
That's all, side note. We've had the medieval peasant argument a lot on this podcast. No, I've heard it from some people. And I mean, similar to your friend who wrote this poem, who, if you can share it, we will totally link to it. We're like, oh, I'm like, ugh, this seems terrible. And then they have kids. And they're like, it's great, actually. It kind of, in some ways, seems to me like a bit of a control freak measure, like a need for, well, I have to be able to ensure that the life of this other person is as good as I want it to me, because want it to be, because that is a reflection on how good of a parent I am, or how much sort of control I have over the way that my life is lived. And if I can't make sure they're going to get into the right preschool and make sure they're going to get into the right college and make sure that their life is going to be happy enough, then I've failed somehow. And I just, like, don't want to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, and this was something I talk about in the story, like, to that person who feels like they're going to be judged that way, like, there is a lot of judgment on parenthood, and like, and it's really sad. Sometimes I'm like talking, like, you know, sometimes I'm like, you guys are all doing this really hard thing. As someone who's not a parent yet, who probably will become a parent, you know, like, there's just a lot of judgment, and I think you feel like you're not going to meet that judgment. It can be easy to say like, well, I'm not going to play because I'm not going to pass. And so I think there's, which is part of like creating a culture, not just to like become a parent, but to support people who are parenting, that it's okay. And one of the things that I spoke to this researcher in the story who she studies, she's a communications professor in North Dakota. She studies how families and particularly women talk about time and just sort of like the ways in which, and she studied like holiday cards and what people would write about them and just the ways that, you know, talking about how busy you are and how you have no time because you're like doing X, Y, Z. And like that became sort of like a way to measure success. And there's, and it's sort of like, think about your own network. Because if you met someone, you're like, how are you doing? If, and especially if they were a parent, I know this is a little hypothetical for this conversation, but if you were just like, I'm good, everything is like, I'm not stressed or like things are fine. Like people might find that a little like off-putting because everybody around them is talking about how stressed you are, how you can barely make it work. And so there's something almost obnoxious about being like, things are like, you know. And I think part of the challenge is both creating a society that's more collectively supportive, but also you individually kind of having the, I'm sorry if this sounds like corny, but just like having the courage to like deal with that discomfort if people, like to sort of carve your own path with you or your partner or whatever, and like be able to just like deal with the idea that some people might be uncomfortable by that. That's what I'm telling myself. That's what I'm mentally psyching for.
So I think we're going to take some questions from the audience, questions or insights, but please phrase it as a question, I hope. Who wants to go first?
That's it for part one, dear listeners. There's a lot more where that came from. If you're not yet a paying subscriber, please head on over to wisdomofcrowds.live and become one. Help support our work. Hope to see you in the bonus.